Chapter 19, The Coach.
Okay, 3, 2, 1, and action.
Well, something did change, and the answer came in a simple form. I received a call from a lady asking if I'd like a free consultation from a business coach. Not a consultant, a coach. This was someone who looks at your business and shows you how to fix it, rather than advising and then charging for the advice. Basically, like a part-time experienced business strategist. Now, normally, if we ever received cold calls from anyone, we'd hang up. We hated cold calls. They serve very little purpose in a world that struggles with trust, and they're a nuisance and a disruption to the working day. But this call was different. They'd taken the time to learn who Sandstorm were, and the reason they contacted us was because the business coach in question was an ex-advertising agency senior exec. He'd done 20 years in the business, so not only would we stand to gain great business advice, we could actually get an insight into how our clients worked and maybe, just maybe, find a way to make Sandstorm into the perfect business to work with our agency clients. For him, it was simple. A client for him, in the form of Sandstorm, could understand and could provide him with a potential long-term revenue stream. Expanding our understanding and streamlining our operations was and always is essential to our business. I asked Rebecca for her opinion, and surprisingly, to me anyway, she instantly said, brilliant, get him in. So along came our business coach, a lovely man called Mark Cadbury, who looked at our business, and it didn't take him long to see what the problem was. Everyone knew what the problem was. Luckily for him, and for me, he didn't have any issues in spelling it out, and more importantly, spelling out how to change it. The problem was still me. Sandstorm was, as I've said, a personal thing. The name itself was something that I'd held dear to me since I was a young boy. But a name and an idea are not what make a business. They create the basis of the business. What we needed to do was take me out of the business. The big question was, well, how? Our business had grown on one major thing, trust. Our clients knew that because I had so much involvement, I'd never let them down. It meant too much to me to ever lose a client. So I'd do everything I possibly could to keep the client and make sure their job was perfect. There are two major problems with this wonderful ideal, time and energy. There is no physical way possible for one man to do the job of a company by themselves. Lord knows I've tried damn hard for 7 straight years in my life to do it, dedicating my heart, soul and everything into Sandstorm. Every hour of every day and all my energy had been focused on it. By the way, if this is not you and you're happy to let other people take charge, let others do the work and to reap the rewards, then I genuinely applaud you. And with the right decisions, you'll do a lot better than me and progress a lot more smoothly in business. The coach's approach for Sandstorm was simple. Look at what you want to achieve and aim at that rather than aiming at Sandstorm. By looking at what you want to personally achieve, the other things are going to have to fall into place. Now, in a lot of ways, that is absolute bollocks. More importantly for me, it wasn't how I wanted to live my life. I could instantly imagine him bringing out a copy of the 4-hour working week at any second. And he bloody did. I didn't ever finish reading it. It made me laugh too much. The type of people in the work who want that lifestyle without having to do anything to actually get there, for me, far too simplistic and far too self-centered. Fundamentally, that laziness means you're not going to make the impact you're potentially capable of. All they stand to achieve is, you know, income without effort, and putting no effort in doesn't really lead to a sense of achievement. Well, for me, really, when you're honest with yourself. I want to have a family and friends around me. I want to work to achieve something for myself, not get something for nothing just because I want it. So, regardless of the coach's opinion, I'd have to change everything about who I was to go along with his idea. So, quite simply, we didn't talk about that again. Instead, we looked at a more realistic approach. Not the, I want a Bentley, get me a Bentley approach, as if I was a petulant sport child. Instead, to look at how we could remould Sandstorm to change the outsider's view of the business and how it functioned. And through that, then change my quality of life. I also turned to a good friend of mine, Keith Fryer. Keith was a man I'd known for a few years, and there were two things to be said for Mr. Fryer. He was a very successful businessman, but far more importantly, he was a great father and a wonderful friend. In fact, he was so good as a friend, I suspect he probably stretched himself too thin. Maybe not. He may now want to punch me in the face for saying that. But it defied logic just how much he could give to others while getting very little in return apart from the knowledge he'd help people. Nonetheless, knowing that his time was incredibly valuable to him and his family, I cautiously went to him for advice. There were two things he told me, and I took them in, although you could choose not to. Firstly, no one ever wrote on their gravestone, I wish I'd spent more time at work. Secondly, in business, a client does not expect you to be personally involved in all their work. They know that if you're at the top and there's a problem, they can rely on your ethos and professionalism to get it delivered, regardless of whether you're working on the job yourself or not. It's all about the ethos of the company, the honesty, the integrity in the way you do business. Many others don't have that, especially those who are the, you know, the I wants that would quite happily set up a business and run it to the ground just to get the right car or house. Keith's approach, the approach we both shared, was to keep to your idea, specialise in what you do and do it well, and through that become the best at what you do. That creates a lasting business. For me, a lasting business was all that really mattered. So I went back to the business coach, set out my requirements, and he worked around those. To make Sandstorm a recognised brand with standards, with procedures, and with a loyal team and loyal clients. In fact, we even got into grading clients in order to work out who from our client list was the most hassle and who really made the working day a pleasure. This was very interesting because it became instantly obvious which clients were utilising most of our time and not really paying for that time. We stopped working with some of these clients. Other clients who were difficult to deal with but would be easily converted into good clients were carefully managed so that they could become workable, with whom we could develop a new and refined working relationship. This was all done in simple ways, from stopping them contacting me directly to storing up their emails and dealing with them in one go per day rather than spending half a day replying. Also, working out what those clients liked and how they worked to get an accurate idea of how we could help them and, more importantly, how we could complete their projects swiftly to make their budgets profitable. Mastering our client base was tricky, but actually a lot easier than I thought it would be. It's really down to instinct and a good P&L. The bigger part of the coach's recommendations, and certainly the most time-consuming, was procedures. Without anything written down, how would your freelance staff know what was expected of them? How would they know the Sandstorm way? So we set about flow charts and regulations that mapped out how we operated, from answering a phone call to booking an edit suite to working on an edit and the standards at which a project had to be completed. We'd already been using freelance staff, but now was the time to set down clear guidance on what we expected. If they didn't meet the criteria, well, they had to go. At this point, when trying to implement standards, I found that relying on freelance friends wasn't going to work well. Putting a contract in between friendship didn't work for many of them. That was a great learning curve, but also pretty obvious. So what did we do? Well, we'll never really employ friends. It seemed like this type of relationship was guaranteed to fail. Even if in just a small way, it's easier to get rid of someone you don't know. It's easier to motivate people with money. So therefore, someone who's a trained and experienced freelancer is going to generally give you more for your money than your friend can, because your friend is helping you, not working for you. They'll also be specialists, which normally means that they can get the job done quicker and to a higher standard. Now, I'm not saying this is always the case, and always avoid taking on someone on a long contract. Give them a day or two, just small projects to see if they deliver the goods. Then, if it works out, give them a couple more jobs. Most freelance staff will be relaxed in by the third or fourth project, and that's when they'll either become really slack, make mistakes, or, in the rare instance, still be brilliant. Those who excel in brilliance are the keepers and the people you can base your business on. One of the freelancers actually came in the form of a friend's friend, so based on my rule above, this could have gone either way. However, I didn't know the guy. I'd never met him before. He was a friend's brother who'd studied media and wanted to do some work experience. No problem, I said. Bring him in. So in he came, skipping along merrily. I had plans for this guy. I had plans to make him, you know, cut wedding videos or something I really couldn't be asked to do myself, but that was going to make us money. However, as soon as he came in, he hit me with an excellence that I rarely see in a freelancer. The first thing, are you listening, salespeople? He was proactive. He pulled out his showreel. He then made the tea. So while the reel was blasting out, I got a decent cuppa. More important than the tea, the showreel was stunning. Incredibly well thought out and definitely above the skill set of anyone I was going to ask to edit a wedding video. He was thrown straight into an edit suite and he stayed there from 9 a.m. till 11 p.m. and in which time he completed three projects. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not a slave driver. Honestly, I'm not. He was just one of those people who did something, did it well and was keen to get onto the next thing, but only when he was happy with what he'd done. That to me is the quality of a great team player. They keep going until everything's neat and tidy and properly finished. To cut the suspense, this was Pedro del Battenberg. You'll hear him mentioned a few times from now on in, mainly because I was there and then convinced he would work for us. However, he was still at university, so it wouldn't happen for now. Well, the answer came as if divine intervention. Once Pedro had gone back to university, we kept other freelancers coming in. Some stayed, some went. And there were errors on all part, mine included. Then came the day Pedro dropped me an email. Hi Tom, just to let you know, I finished uni. Weirdly, it was the same day, in fact, probably only 3 hours after, that we received a nice 6-week editing project. So I called him straight away. Hi, Pedro. Are you free to come and do some editing work for me today? The reply came, yeah, sure. I'm supposed to be moving house tomorrow, but that can wait. 3 hours later, he was in the office. He stayed there for 6 weeks, only returning home on weekends. The project he worked on was completed in style and with accuracy in a way I was actually rather envious of. He had similar skills to me, but he was more meticulous and he had the advantage of being a freelancer, not trying to run a company, and it was obvious in the results. By this point, more work was on the cards and he stayed freelancing with us pretty much solidly for 4 or 5 months. I decided to take him on properly. There was no point in playing around. Other companies had also seen the potential and it was becoming increasingly difficult to get his time. So, tick. The business coach's move was working well. We now had a great all-rounder working at Sandstorm who could focus on doing the work and just asked me if he was stuck on something that, well, he hadn't come across before, because experience still does count for something, luckily. That way I could focus on the sales, and also, through this, the business had grown to the point where clients knew that they contacted me for new projects, and if work was in progress, in most cases, they could deal directly with Pedro. On top of that, they knew that accounting issues were dealt with by Rebecca, and together we made a nice little team. Still not big enough to do all the work ourselves, but it was a great start. Very much like the situation we had when we first moved the business to Newbury back in 2003, although now we had a team who were specialists and had very defined roles. Back when we had the Newbury office, we were doing so many different types of work that specialists were of no real use to us as full-time staff. Finally, Sandstorm was beginning to make a consistent impact both in the work and our reputation again. If I'd taken this approach at the very beginning of Sandstorm, which is easier said than done, as finding the right people is always a challenge, then a few things would have been different. It would have relied on a few other factors too, so suddenly sounding a little bit more complicated, isn't it? Mainly, I would have started saving money while still employed, rather than constantly spending. With the money I'd saved, I could have kept overheads low, picked my work more carefully, and thus spearheaded Sandstorm's specialism in a shorter space of time. Instead, Sandstorm, as a business, worked on so many different types of work that no one client ever came to us for the same thing. We had a client who did CD-ROMs, a client who did TV ads, a client who did internal communications. We even had a client who we did websites for. Specialism is the key. If a client can pigeonhole you, then, well, although the money will come more slowly at first, they'll know you for one thing, and they'll learn over time, well, if you're any good, that you're the only people they can rely on for that one thing. That leads to recommendations, and from recommendations you can build a sustainable business quickly and very efficiently. Over 90% of the work Sandstorm does to date is based on direct recommendations. Again, going back to hindsight, as soon as I'd specialised, I could have started to use decent freelancers who did one thing really well, and more importantly, looked for someone I could trust to uphold the brand, to work on a full-time basis with me, to help move projects along more smoothly. Finally, with Pedro and Rebecca working with me, I was starting to burn out less, progress was definitely being made, and I could see Sandstorm moving in the right direction. Along with employing Pedro, we also installed a hugely impressive and hugely expensive bit of facilities management software, which was totally geared up for the film industry, and that enabled us to quickly understand our P&L accurately and be able to reproduce it, as well as tracking what kit and people we utilised, when, how often, and why. Basically, everything we needed to know to analyse our business in one piece of software. The business was actually becoming an actual business. All we needed to focus on now was growth.